Is yeah, that yeah, that's the Sanic meme.
Okay,
yeah,
see, yeah, yeah. I was disconnected from that one. I thought they were just being silly with Sonic.
Your dad, and now he's like full boomer.
Yeah, you know, hey he's man, like
completely disconnected from internet culture,
from internet memes. Great, great. Thanks for that. Alrighty, Joel, let me ask you this to start this one out, okay? Have you ever been to the Golden Corral?
I don't think so.
Really? You've never been to Golden Corral?
No, I think I've only seen their TV commercials. Dude. It's like one of those like 3M commercials where you're like,
Dude, so recently I hadn't been to the Golden Corral maybe like, you know, 3 or 4 times in my life. And then we recently started going a little bit. That place rocks, man. You roll up in there and there's like a whole buffet, anything you want, you know, just classic American mentality here, you know? And that, Joel, is kind of like what we got today on the pod. Because we have a smorgasbord, a buffet of different research and news to talk about today.
That was the wildest transition you've done ever.
Not digging my intro? Not digging it?
No, that was great. That was great. Okay. That was crazy, though. I had no idea where that was going.
Hey, man. The Golden Corral.
We started Golden Corral.
Takeaway number one podcast. From the podcast today. All right, man. Dude, we got a ton of... I mean, we probably have 12 different things we got on the list today. So I don't know if we'll get through all this. But tell you what, let's not go in the order we have in the doc. Let's talk about this this Portswigger Research release first, because whenever Portswigger Research comes out with something new, gosh darn it, it's going to be a banger.
Bro, this is actually the best timing ever, because I was testing something and specifically I needed a URL validation bypass.
Yep.
And I was like, hey, this is... extremely topical, and I just plugged it. So for those who don't know, before I get ahead of myself, Portswigger came out with a new cheat sheet. So they have all these cheat sheets where basically, like, you know, I think calling it a cheat sheet is a bit of not really doing it justice, because it's more like an interactive payload generator.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Where basically, you know, they have these for various other scenarios.
Yeah, I think the XSS one is phenomenal.
Yeah, the XSS one is phenomenal. I think that's probably the biggest one that I'm aware of other than this one. Mm. I'm sure there's other ones, but the XSS one is great. You basically just say, like, I'm on this browser and I'm in this element type. Mm-hmm. Give me every payload. And it'll say, okay, you can do on key down, on key up, on load, on hover, on whatever, right? So that's really awesome. They also made one now for URL validation. So essentially, you can put in the target domain that it, you know, passes validation. You can put in the attacker domain that you're trying to get to. And then you can set different things like URL encoding, Unicode escapes, whether or not to use special characters. There's IPv6, IPv4, like all these different things. And it just spits out a list and you just copy it to your clipboard and you can paste that in Kaido. You can paste that in wherever. Burp, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I guess we should say sorry, Portswigger team. It's your product. We should lead with burp this time. Yeah. Paste it into burp. yeah, no, but but as far as I know, yeah, can you paste into burp, or do you have to?
I think you can. Okay. I'm pretty sure you can paste from clipboard. Okay. But anyways, yeah, so basically you get a list of possible options and you can just paste this into your proxy of choice and test all of the different bypass options.
So nice.
It's really, really awesome.
It's really good. It's nice because it allows you to specify an allowed domain name and an attacker domain name as well, so you don't have to like do these like said commands to like pop in your domain, and then sometimes they're like encoded a little weird so it doesn't do it. Like, it automatically does all of it, which is super awesome. And then there's various advanced settings as well, including like various IPv4 to IPv6 transformations, cloud metadata endpoints, just tons of stuff.
Yeah So very, very cool, very awesome tool. It also has built into this, it's not just for absolute URLs, right? So like maybe it's for an open redirect or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's also for host headers. So maybe you're trying to get access to an internal tool. You're trying to do some vhost bypass. They mm-hmm. have host header generation for the same type of stuff. So basically you put in the allowed domain, the target domain that you were trying to hit, and it'll generate you a list of host header options. It also has cores options. So very, very awesome tool. They made a little blog post about it as well, if you're curious about sort of the background behind it. But I'm sure if you haven't seen it on Twitter already, you can find the link down down below. But
yeah,
very, very helpful tool, especially if you're trying to bypass some URL validation, parsing, open redirects, SSRFs, you name it.
This is so pretty too, dude, because you hover over each one of the URLs, right? Just hover over those and you'll see a... like a name or a bypass like categorization for this specific why this works.
That might be new. I don't think that was there when I first tried this, but this is awesome. Safari allows left parentheses as subdomain http://allowed.sub.left_attacker/. That yeah, these are awesome.
This is really cool.
It's like the marriage of Shazzer and
yeah.
and like
Shazzer and cheat
like
sheets.
the fuzzing side of like Shazzer, where it's like, yeah. you know, browser specific stuff and all these weird quirks and whatever, combined with just like, I have this thing and this thing, get me there. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at it though, and it's, you know, obviously released by Portswigger Research, but it's created by D4D and it's linked down at the bottom of the cheat sheet. But so it's not even Gareth, and there is like shout outs to Gareth. Like it says in the big thanks to section, the first one on the list is
Gareth Hayes. There's a lot of names on here. I think next time I make a tool, I'm just going to shout out all the people that I like.
Yeah.
And hope
yeah.
that they're like, oh, thanks.
Oh yeah. I don't
big thanks to, Franz Rosen, Orange,
anybody who's ever inspired me. No, this is great though. Really, really high quality thing here. I'm definitely going to be using that. And man, it saves us so much time too, because there's so much like encoding that you have to do to really like thoroughly bypass things. And you just need that one anomaly, you know, yeah. you just need that one anomaly to start seeing some weird stuff there.
Yep. So. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Let's see. So, okay. I said on
the
pod,
you want to keep the tool chain rolling?
Well, just, we can do that. You want to go down to this one right here?
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about this.
Okay. So, this is really interesting because, oh, geez. I mean, this had to have been before COVID even. Mm. I was working with Smeagles on some like random tool. And I think there was a tool called like fast.js or something, or like fast.sh, I think is what it was called. It was like a really old tool. And basically, it was just like designed to do like DNS lookups in bulk and like detect good DNS servers and whatever. I was like, oh, this is like really slow. Let's make it faster. And so I wrote this tool called fast.py. And I think I actually released it on my GitHub. Fast.py.
Let's see.
No.
Fresh.py?
Fresh.py. That's what it is. Yeah, fresh.py. Yeah, so it was a remix of fresh.sh. Yeah, fresh, not fast. So fresh.sh basically just fetches a bunch of DNS resolvers, tests them, tries to find a list of good resolvers so that you can do big mass DNS lookups.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is slow. So I wrote fresh.py, which did it way faster. And then I also have a private version of it, fresh.go. and that was
very creative naming, Joel. I love
thank
that.
Thank you. You know, I try to be original. yeah, so I completely forgot about that project. Mm. And then, I don't know, like, a month ago, Smeagles tweets out that the company that he founded, co-founder of Hadrian, has this new tool called Sanic DNS that does, I mean, it definitely blows my tool like way out of the water.
Well, this is also, this does full resolutions as well. This is like
it's not just a
mass DNS alternative.
Exactly. It's not just like clean resolver finding. It's very like, I mean like, okay, 5 million lookups per second.
That's insane, man. I feel like the resolvers, I feel like at 5 million like resolves per second, you're just gonna like the resolvers are gonna be like, okay, that guy is actually becoming a problem now. Like
it's one of those things where like, so I think The only time I really hit this crux was when I got 10 gig service at my house in California.
Oh my God, dude.
And
here we go again with the 10 gig service.
Here's the thing. When you get internet that fast, you realize, oh yeah, most things actually aren't designed to like work with networks this fast. Mm. And I think you're probably going to find a very similar thing with SANIC DNS, which is that like most DNS resolvers and infrastructure is not designed to do 5 million requests per second. Mm. So that's definitely going to be something you're going to have to probably work around a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, if you really want to see those types of speeds, that being said, even if it works at like a fraction of that, like 1 million DNS requests per second.
Totally like, crazy. And I love how the first step, if you go to the GitHub repo for this, the first step of getting started is you're going to need more memory. Yeah. So go ahead and like allocate yourself another extra gigabyte of memory with like DP, DK, huge pages. So that's pretty hilarious. Also, I love the artwork for this. Like they just got Sonic, like gotta go fast, and then
the Sonic meme in there.
So is that meme actually Sonic? Like
that's the Sonic meme.
Okay,
yeah,
see, I was just connected from that one. I thought they were just being silly
just
with Sonic.
Her dad, and now he's like full boomer.
Yeah, you know, hey
he's
man,
like completely disconnected from internet culture,
from internet memes. Great, thanks for that. But yeah, dude, this is I think this is, you know, every couple of years we see a core tool that I think is used by a lot of people get unseated or whatever, right? Somebody takes the crown. And I think this one might take it from MassDNS. I've used MassDNS for the past a long time. And it looks like this might be the move now. And I actually passed this off to Donut as well, because you know, Donut's kind of like my go-to guy when I'm talking about high-performance tools. I'm like, because he knows what's up with that, right? He wrote a really high-performance port scanner and stuff like that. And he just sort of skimmed the code and took a look at it. And he said that it seems like they're doing all these things right. They're using something that I had never even heard of called XDP sockets, which apparently stands for Express Data Path Sockets, which I guess is just express sockets. I don't know, like sockets, but faster.
You know? I think it's like basically like kernel level sockets.
Oh yeah,
is sort of the idea. I mean, like there's a certain point, right, where you start to get capped by user land stuff, and you need things to be like lower level, or higher level, I guess, lower level, whatever you want.
Yeah, lower level
to be, you know, optimally fast. So like one of the things that's in the README that it talks about is like it has this I40E driver support, so it can hook directly, it can bind directly onto the NIC. Like it works with like 10 gig and up, right? So it's like 10, 25, and 40 gig cards.
Oh my gosh.
Like Intel NIC cards. And then it can do, you know, they said on a 40 gig line they were able to do 7.5 million requests per second.
Oh my gosh.
That's like, you know, with their own resolver. But even still, like that's just like redonkulous. So yeah. Very, very cool. I feel like this is one of those tools that you develop out of necessity, which is pretty awesome. So it just kind of shows you like what sort of like the end game version of like DNS lookups and stuff looks like when you're like really trying to do it at scale and do it efficiently.
I wonder what AssetNode is doing with DNS lookups, like whether they're wrapping mass DNS or whether they've got a custom solution.
I've had some really in-depth conversations with the folks over there about how they do stuff. I don't think I'm gonna say anything specific, but they definitely do some really cool stuff. And you know, similar to this, you have to push sort of the boundaries of how you're like, you have to really rethink how you do stuff in order to break through, you know, these sort of limit caps.
I agree. Very cool. So new. Normally, we don't really cover, you know, big recon stuff super much on here. But I think a tool unseating MassDNS as the go-to DNS resolver is probably a good one to mention. So that's why I bring that up. Okay, so let me go back to what I was saying before.
Okay.
Which was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, probably now. I talked about the write-ups from Orange, from this past DEF CON Black Hat. And I mentioned that I hadn't, you know, when I went to go reproduce it, I was like, shit, my Apache is actually patched. And I didn't actually even like intentionally patch it. It was just patched already. And so I was like, dang, I don't really feel like spinning up this whole thing or whatever. And so I just didn't continue with the reproducing of it. And then I saw on Twitter that Hari Sek released a GitHub repo. Man, it's the morning, man. I gotta take my sip of my coffee. A GitHub repo called Orange Confusion Attacks. And essentially he Dockerized all of these attacks that Orange released in that presentation, which is super duper helpful. So you can play with them and like fine tune your tools if you're trying to get some detection going for it. So we'll drop that link down in the description. But I so appreciate when people do this sort of thing where they minimize that friction piece to like playing around with something new. And I would love to see more people integrate that into their research flow. And say like, hey, you know, I'm releasing some new research on XYZ. Here is a Docker container that you can use to reproduce this, like, boom, like no problem. You
know? Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think like creating a Docker container, I mean, as you're doing research, it's probably not your first thought, because I catch myself doing this all the time where I start to overcomplicate things. And if I were to think about like, oh, I want to do research on this web server, like, let me Dockerize the whole process, like, before I even, like, that's basically definition overcomplicating things.
Yeah.
So I would probably have stopped myself there. That being said, if you're going to release it, make it easy, you know, for people to do that sort of research and just, like, go that extra mile, and it'll make it so much better so that, you know, I love Hari Sek, I love Orange, but
yeah.
The fact that, you know, one of them had to do the extra mile for the other is, you know.
Yeah, it's so great. You know, and so I think one, if you want to be a member of the community that like does something like this and that's like your thing, I think that would be super cool. I think you would get really popular if you just started tweeting out like, hey,
pretty good at generating Docker files.
Exactly. Here's the research. Here's the Docker file so you can reproduce it. I mean, super helpful. And then, you know, to any of you guys out there that are actually producing, like your own security research, that would also, I think would be massive. And I also feel like Docker is just kind of like a high value skill for security researchers to just understand, you know, even if you're not doing Docker container security or anything like that, but like, I think if you just understand how it works and are able to spin up Docker containers easily and create Docker containers pretty easily, I think that is a very high value skill. It will save you a lot of time and effort.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's one of those technologies where it's like for me, like I would view it almost as like Linux, right? Or like knowing how to use a shell, where it's sort of one of those fundamental technologies that at minimum you should be like familiar with and understand like the core concepts of, even if you don't like understand it at a super low level, like just knowing like, oh, okay, there's containers and these containers are like templated and you can have like commands and this Docker file like sets up like a container in like a specific way that's like reproducible, like just like knowing like the basics of what Docker is, how to use it, have some experience with it. Like if you don't have that, take a day, like on the this weekend.
It's worth it. I mean, it really
like,
is.
Like, you know, take a day out of your weekend, just like sit down for a couple hours, like install Docker, create some basic containers, fiddle around with it, like read through some docs. It'll be worth your while.
And I feel like I'm sitting here preaching this, right? And I've done this multiple times, but I also am not really to the level where I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm a Docker guy, you know, I can use Docker, you know, like,
but that's fine, right? Like,
yeah,
you've hit the minimum, like, you know, like it's one of those things where
I'm not scared of it, but also I'm not like, ah, that's easy, you know?
Yeah, and I feel but like, I also think like you don't need to necessarily know, like, you know, it's not like so mandatory that you should, like, everybody should know everything about Docker. Like if you're doing a project that involves Docker, like a great example, you want to reverse engineer some software and there's a Docker container for it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people aren't going to know how to do that, like how to do what, like pull files out of a Docker container. I only know how to do it because I wanted to do that specifically. Yeah. And I looked up how to do it. And if I wanted to do it again, I would have to look it up again.
Yeah.
So like, it's just one of those things that like, you know, you get familiar with it out of necessity and, you know, what, you know, learn it as you need it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that, man. Yeah. I think for me, it's not something that I use super duper often because I'm not doing a lot of this like patch reverse engineering or like even really going after enterprise software that often. But whenever I sit down and I actually am like, oh, let me just like build a Docker container for this, or, you know, spin up this Docker container, it's like that I'm like, that was much easier than I expected it to be. And maybe I shouldn't let these you know, inhibitions hold me back in a lot of scenarios.
Yeah.
All right. So next one. Actually, I do have a transition for this one. You ready for this? Okay. So actually, this is super way out there. Because I was going to say, you know what a Docker container that I have built is, which is the WordPress testing environment Docker container. And also related to WordPress.
Cut.
No, Joel, we don't do cuts on this podcast, man. We don't do cuts. All right. No. So I did want to shout this write up out, though, because it's super good. So the write up, of course, that I'm talking about is the WordPress Give WP Pop Chain to RCE write up done by Mr. TuxRacer. And when Mr. TuxRacer drops anything, specifically WordPress stuff, like he's just quite good with WordPress stuff.
I feel like his tweets worth a read. Have a minimum bar being like RCE or worse.
Yeah, like RCE or global, universal RCE. Yeah. Yeah, so I think this is a really good write-up. I think he does a good job of, I mean, clearly he went in there and like, you know, reproduced it thoroughly himself. And I love the little details that he added in here. So for example, let me read you this. He's talking about the situation or the specific location where the deserialization is happening in this chain. And he says, PHP object injection exploits usually reference class names using their namespaces, which might contain slashes. Strip slashes underscore deep tries to get rid of these by calling strip slashes on every value. However, this can be easily bypassed by using four backslashes in the namespace names. And I just like this sort of detail might be something that a lot of write-up people would just sort of solve themselves and then skip over and not include, you know, in the actual write-up itself. But I find stuff like this extremely useful and also kind of counterintuitive. Like, why does strip slashes allow a backslash in the actual final result? Like, that shouldn't be how that works. And so I literally sat down and I was like, all right, I got to play with this. So I spun up a little PHP thing and I was playing with it. And essentially, I think the reason why it works is because it will escape, you know, if you have four backslashes, right? It will convert the two backslashes. It'll remove one of the backslashes, right? Because one of them is an escape character and one of them is a backslash. It'll remove that. So it's just a backslash. And then it'll do the same one for the next one. And now you've got two backslashes right next to each other, which is an escaped backslash again. So it produces a backslash. And it's just not something that I would have really like intuitively tried to in this situation. So it's just great to be aware of the fact that that strip slashes can be bypassed in PHP.
Yeah. So dude, this is one of those like mental gadgets, right?
Yeah.
It's like the little nugget that you get from reading this. Like, you read through this, cool research. Mm-hmm. Does it apply? How many times are you going to see give WP? Probably not that often. How many times are you going to see an outdated give WP? Almost never. However, that's not really the important part.
Right.
The important part is, how does this work? Like, understanding that. And then separately, the little nuggets, like the strip slashes and how that works. Because the next time you see something, you know, maybe you know it's PHP, maybe you don't know it's PHP, maybe you do some fingerprinting and find out it's PHP. Now you have something to add in your payload specifically targeted towards PHP because maybe they're using strip slashes and you can exploit it in this way. So it's just, you know, those little mental gadgets.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even have to remember it specifically. You're like, oh man, what was
notice it, right? You see strip slashes and you'll start staring at it and you're like, why am I staring at strip slashes? Like, why do I feel like there's something weird about that? And then you'll look it up.
Start searching like strip slashes. Bug bounty RCE.
Yeah, exactly. RCE will get you there. Yeah, no, that's great, man. A couple other takeaways that I had for this one was the entry point for this attack. And we talked about this a little bit way back in episode, I don't know, whatever number it was, where we talked about WordPress security a lot. But one of the main ways to do WordPress security in a lot of the API flows is to have these nonces in place. And sometimes these nonces will only be accessible from pages where admins can access or something like that, right? But technically, the endpoint where you utilize the nonce doesn't actually require that privilege, right? Anybody can hit that endpoint, but if you don't have the nonce, it's going to freak out, right?
Dude, so I was reading through this, I was like, oh man, the stars just keep, another one just aligns.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. But I think that's a really good call out for anybody who is looking at WordPress stuff is like, if you have the, you know, where they're doing the add action and it's WP underscore Ajax, right? That can be triggered by, you know, even a subscriber level user, right? And if there's not an actual permission check on that, there's just a nonce verification check, then you may be able to leak that nonce and actually call that function still. And, you know, even more so if it's like WP Ajax no priv and you can just hit it from an unauthenticated perspective or like admin init or something like that. So, we've got some automation actually set up in the Critical Thinkers channel for the data streams section where we automatically scan every new commit done to WordPress plugins above 50,000 installs, and we use a AST tree to go through AST tree.
Yeah.
tree.
Abstract syntax tree.
Yeah, abstract syntax tree to go through and like look for these verification nonces and lack of ways for checking various roles within the WordPress APIs. So we catch a lot of those bugs when those come through. I think that script probably pops out a couple CVEs a month at least that just get handed off to the critical thinkers community and they make a couple bucks on it here and there. But yeah. I think this sort of situation where you have a nonce and the nonce is in place, but the nonce is actually leakable is a more complicated situation that would be a little bit more if you're doing intentional research on a plugin.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And on top of that,
yeah.
Yesterday, I got an email. I'll give a little free shout out here.
Okay.
From the WordFence folks.
All right.
Who are now running a couple different bug bounty promotions on their thing. They've added XSS vulnerabilities on anything over 1,000+
really?
Installs into scope. They have increased bounties. They have a new install tier for plugins with over 5 million active installs with bounties up to 30K. So, wow. I mean, we have alerts for plugins.
Yeah.
There's some new research on plugins. There's some higher bounties for plugins. So maybe this weekend, if you want to go check out some of the WordPress plugins and go get some 30K bounties.
Wow, 30K is a serious bounty, dude.
Yeah, that's legit. So very, very cool stuff. You know, I don't think WordPress is going anywhere anytime soon. So.
It's used everywhere, man.
It's
so
everywhere.
It is really a high value thing to know the ins and outs of. So
the weird thing is like, it'll be used on like sites that you would never expect to be WordPress. Like you'll just run recon and like my nuclei will say, hey, by the way, this is what running WordPress. I'm like, heck, this is running WordPress. And then I'd run a WP scan and you know, it's got like all these different plugins. So definitely not going anywhere.
Yeah. I'm going to look up the episode really quick. Popping WordPress plugins methodology brain dump. Episode 55 is the one where we are joined by that WordFence researcher, and we kind of talk about what the approach is to hack WordPress bugs find WordPress vulnerabilities. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's PHP, right? So, of course, you know, if somebody's just putting a PHP file out there and they're just like, you know, echoing $_get whatever, then you're gonna get XSS. But there's also a lot of custom PHP WordPress synergies that happen.
Bro, the only thing I'll say is, okay, the only times I've ever used PHP ever is in the most hacky of situations. It like, I never write a PHP POC when I'm like, I just need something normal. It's like when I need weird, like I need to add a header in the response in real time.
No,
like
Joel,
some like
that's a you problem.
I'm running
man.
Eval and like the head like.
Dude, actually, have you seen the whole, and we won't rabbit trail down this for too long, but have you seen the like movement lately surrounding like reverting to PHP and jQuery and just shipping really fast for like.
Dude, let's go. I'm so here for it.
The
dude,
levels okay. IO, like.
I know you said we weren't going to rabbit hole on this, but a week or two ago, I was just like, just for fun, I went down the cursor rabbit hole.
With
like AI code writing and projects and stuff. And I literally got to the point where I was like, okay, I don't want any React. I want basic HTML. I want this to look like 90s website, like straight HTML, JavaScript, and it actually worked way better.
Dude, it's a real thing, man. I think there's something to be said about just
take
using
me back,
the minimum
bro, take me back.
Required, you know, technology to do it. Okay, all right, Joel, I'm writing us back in. Okay, last comment that I want to have on this one is, if you're not familiar with PopChains, I think that's a pretty cool loan class to at least understand if you like to geek out over stuff. And it's a deserialization, you know, technique, but. Man, those things are fun to research. And when we were going down the WordPress rabbit hole back earlier this year, it's just I had so much fun hunting for PopChain gadgets to allow to pivot from class to class and actually get arbitrary code execution. And this example here in the blog post by Mr. TuxRacer is pretty awesome. I think he pulled this graphic from he did. He pulled it from the WordFence team's blog. But I appreciate when they break down all that and allow us to see the beauty of what a pop chain looks like in its full glory. Because like this is what, 5 steps before it even gets to the code execution. So you're in deep by the time you actually pop something.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's one of those scenarios where you're like, is this actually going to pop? And when it does, oh man,
it does.
Feels so good.
Feels so good, dude. All right.
Awesome.
Where do you want to go?
Another tool?
Dude, all right, hit me.
It's Tool Tuesday. Okay. It really is.
Joel. Hey man. Hey, thank you for evening the score because I did a crappy transition earlier. So all right.
Tool Tuesday. All right.
You're so done talking now.
That was the best transition of
okay,
all time.
Go.
All right. So Yes We Hack has released a tool called XSS Tools.
This what has been around for a while, though, dude. Just FYI.
They released it 3 years ago. it's crazy. I have literally never heard of this thing. You linked this
right
up until 5 seconds ago. I thought this was brand new release. I linked it to one of my friends. He was like, what, this is cool. So it this is awesome. The best way I can analogize this, I can make an analogy for this. Mm-hmm. This is a terrible analogy.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. This is maybe the worst way I can make an analogy for it. Anybody who's used Pwn tools before for like native exploitation, binary exploitation. So Pwn tools is like this Python library that you can import, and you just do like from Pwn import star, and then you just have all these functions that are like awesome, like helper functions. You can like decode stuff.
This is actually pretty rad, dude.
Breakpoints, whatever. So this like is kind of like that, but for XSS. So it's like this library. You just import this .js file, and then it gives you all these functions that you can call. So you know you just do like payload.new, then you do .add exfiltrator, and you give it a function to exfiltrate, and you do .eval, and then it like runs some code, and you .exfiltrate and it exfiltrates it to your exfiltrator, and you .fetch dom, and it like gets a page from the right. So it does like all these like it's just a lot of helper functions that like if you were to write an XSS payload, like you have an XSS, you want to exploit it and like build out a POC. Building out the POC is big pain. So
yeah.
Big pain. Jeez.
it is a big pain, dude. Much like your throat is experiencing right now.
It's really awesome.
The exfiltrators piece, I think, is really cool too, right? Because listen to this. Listen to these exfiltrators. Post message exfiltration, get based exfiltration, send beacon based exfiltration, image exfiltration, iframe exfiltration. So like it's got a bunch of scenarios for ways when you have limited exfiltration methodologies and you don't have to like go and write all this custom code for it. You just import the library and boom, boom, boom. So BitK dropped this on me when he was doing the prototype pollution masterclass in the Critical Thinkers Discord. And I was like, wow, how have I not heard of this? Because I feel like this would save a bunch of time. But also, let me just say, this kind of gets like this, I think this was way cooler before AI, because like now I can just, I literally just go to ChatGPT or whatever, and I'm like, all right, write this to do this. And then it just does it, and it works so well.
The one thing I will say though, I think there are probably some areas where you can improve this a little bit because like ChatGPT is good for like basic stuff. When it gets like more complicated, it can, maybe it's okay sometimes. But like when you're talking about exfiltrators, I'm thinking, okay, let's add the Portswigger CSS blind exfiltration technique as an exfiltrator. And let's like update this, because this is, you know, 3 years out of date now. So there's probably some other exfiltration methods that have come up since then. That's the first one that came to mind. And then, you know, in those really weird scenarios, I think this still has a really good use case where you want to write a really high quality POC that just works, and you can just do this. And it just works.
Yeah. So, dude, but also check this out. Like, there's a payload here within here that says start keylogger. Like, that's the kind of stuff that that it's nice to have like modularized, right? Because it's like, I know it's possible.
Is in the README. It's awesome.
Yeah, I know that it's possible for me to like do a keylogger, but then I gotta like write all the JavaScript and like, you know, exfiltrate it out. But this thing will just automatically do it. So, okay. Also, I'm sorry, Joel. The other thing that I was really excited about, which is kind of ironic because it's clickjacking, but is the clickjacking functionality here. Okay, so listen up, critical thinking listeners here. Okay, I'm not saying that clickjacking is a valid bug
in word of here first
most of the situations
at
okay,
the bottom
please.
Of your reports, Reinerator told me that clickjacking is a valid report.
Joel,
please accept
stop.
Bounty please.
No, but there are scenarios. I have had a clickjacking accepted as a high. When you have like a clickjacking on, for example, on an OAuth approval page, so where you can just force the button, you know, they click one button and now their account is pwned, right? Valid. The thing is, these things are a pain in the ass to write because you've got to like align all the things and where's the button, who knows, you know, and it's a whole step. But this library has a clickjacker functionality. And all you have to do, I'm just going to read from the README here. Writing clickjacking code can be tedious. With XSS tools, you only need to supply the position of the target element on the target page, and then you're good to go. And I'm just like, yes, this is what I need. This is what I need.
It's so good. I mean, this is awesome. I love little helper tools like this. Bad transition number two. Are you ready? Are you done with this one? Are you
ready? No, I'm not done. Okay. Also,
okay. Finish.
Okay. Let me just say. Let me add one more thing about the clickjacker. Okay. Not only did they build that into it, right? But they also gave us this little one-liner down at the bottom that says, "Hey, you can find the bounding box interactively using this code." So they just give you like a JavaScript one-liner that you can just toss into your script console.
It's these little snippets,
dude,
man.
It's clutch.
The little nuggets.
It's so clutch. So, I'm sorry. That's all I wanted to say. It's just really helpful for XSS exfiltration and in clickjacking POCs. So, okay,
I mean,
take it away. Go ahead. Okay,
well, the impact is right here. You know, they give you the impact in the README. And you know what else reminds me of impact? Somebody in our Discord in the hacking channel.
Oh my god, Joel, that
Volant. Okay. This guy.
This was nuts. This was actually
this was
nuts.
Crazy. I'm not gonna lie. Like normally I'm like skeptical of text injection, HTML injection, whatever. Okay, this is pretty big brain, I will not lie. This guy found I guess it's just HTML injection, right?
Dude, it's actually not even HTML injection. This is text injection, Joel.
Text injection.
This is not even HTML. There is not a bug here, right?
Yeah, it's like bug question mark. So what they did is they realized, hang on a second. You ever seen those ASCII art? Those big like the man's dancing in the chat, you know, on like Twitch chat and it's all ASCII art. Yeah, so he was like, hang on a second. Big brain moment. And then he built a QR code out of these ASCII Unicode block characters,
dude.
Whatever. Like the solid white squares and then like the shaded square characters or whatever. I don't know how to describe this without a screenshot. But yeah, they basically they built a QR code. But there's a screenshot in our Discord from this guy in the hacking channel. It's just text injection.
Yeah.
But it builds out a QR code. And I don't know.
You scan the, so Joel, I talked to him. You scan the QR code and it takes over your account, right? And so it's like, this is amazing, dude. Like, this is so good.
I will say, he went through a lot of effort here to redact the URL and, and like,
all of the surrounding stuff.
And then the raw QR code.
Oh, the raw QR code's there. Okay, shit. Maybe we can't put it up on the screen. Dang it.
I will say, you probably could just open in Chrome.
Oh my gosh. It takes me to a thing.
I'm going to guess that's probably the target.
Dude, don't say it on air. Now we got to bleep it.
I didn't say it. I didn't say it. Okay. I just said, hello from blank. Okay, so maybe we...
Yeah, okay, so I don't know. Maybe we'll put it up on the screen, maybe we won't. But what I wanted to bring to you...
as an exercise.
Okay, Joel, just you take a second, because I think you're crying over there right now. This is such a beautiful exploit. I just wanted to bring this to the listeners, because, dude, isn't this such a beautiful representation of hacker mentality, right? Like text injection, classic NA bug, right? Doesn't matter at all. But this guy figures out a way to use some technical prowess, to use his knowledge of Unicode, and I think he also had like some sort of tangential CSS injection on this page that allowed him to do some like CSS realigning or whatever, but to make this QR code, and then he uses his knowledge of the app to take that, when that QR code actually gets scanned, it does something, you know, bad to their account. So presumably they're using like same site strict or something like that, which is why it needs to originate from. I'm not sure. That should just be a CSERF. So maybe it's just a part of the attack methodology. But he went the full way to build out this whole POC. And when you do that, man, doesn't your heart just like swell with pride? Like
what it swells with is, I hope Triage didn't just go, oh, we're having trouble reproducing this bug. Like, because like this is one of those things where, yeah, I think when it, like, if you can get it to the team, it's like a beautiful side of bug bounty that is so creative.
Yeah.
And so like out of the box thinking that is so cool, where it's like you have like ChatGPT couldn't come up with that shit in a million years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like straight up, you could feed that problem. You could click the regenerate button 1,000 times. It'll never be like, you should generate a QR code with ASCII characters,
right,
with your text injection, right? Like that is, it's such a cool, like unique attack scenario, and it's so creative. Like if I had received that, I'd been like, all right, at minimum, low yeah. bounty just for creativity.
But, well, dude, I think it also just kind of pays for itself a little bit too. You know, not to say that you don't need to pay for these super crazy bugs, because I think the company should. But like when you get to the end of that I just finished a POC last night for a bug that I am super proud of. That's like you know, it's funny. I call it like a Matan Bear bug now after that episode, because it's like, and then you do this, and I grab this cookie, and then overflow the cookie, like this and that and the other thing, and it comes together, and it's so smooth and clean, and you just, it feels so good, you know?
And then next morning, Triage goes,
yeah,
hey, do you own this domain?
Yeah, exactly. Lovely. Yeah. Well, it's ups and downs of bug bounty, man. That's
something that's
never
happened to me before.
Let me just... Thank you for that, Joel. But yeah, I think shout out to Valent here from the Discord. This is a very cool strategy of text injection and Unicode characters to build out a QR code. Very cool. Very cool indeed. All right, let's see what else we got on the list for today, dude. Okay, let's jump back up to this browser tracking protection thing. Okay.
Okay. So I'm gonna let you take this
one. Yeah, I got you.
This was dense AF.
Yes, it was. It was very dense.
I didn't even know this was a thing, by the way. And it took me a very, like, more Google searches than it should have to even find out what this ITP right? thing is. I was like, what is ITP? And everybody's like, ITP is a mechanism for... I was like, no. What is it?
Yeah.
what does ITP stand for?
Yeah, exactly. And so essentially what this article is, and we'll link it down below, it's bypassing browser tracking protection for cores misconfiguration abuse by the PT security team. And essentially what this blog post does is it details Safari's and Firefox's answer of sorts to Chrome's same site lacks, okay? So what they've done in Firefox and Safari is they've implemented these tracking protections that happen by default, which prevent cookies from being sent to third-party domains so that you're not getting tracked by like, oh, you came to this website and there was like a pixel for whatever and it set a cookie and now we know who you are forever, right? And these have been kind of foiling exploits for a little while. Like I've heard some murmurs in the critical thinking Discord and in the community a little bit of like, man, this exploit works fine here, but it doesn't work over here. Like, why is that happening? And it's because Firefox and Safari have implemented these. So the TLDR of the situation is that you won't be able to send not top level requests, so like a fetch request or whatever with credentials with it in Safari or Firefox, if you don't first do a window.open to the vulnerable page, okay? And so what this means is that if you do see vulnerable cores configurations nowadays, typically I've been kind of not paying attention to those very much because same site kind of screws with that if it's cookie-based authentication, which it has to be for that. But this is still very possible in Firefox and in Safari because you just need to harvest one click to open up a window. And when you do that, at least in Firefox, this is the case, there's a relationship between those two domains stored for 30 days. So let's say I do it from, you know, my poc.rhinorator.com to google.com. I do a window.open, right? So now poc.rhinorator.com can send credentialed requests to google.com for 30 days, okay? And so all you got to do is do that window.open and then you're good to go. I think Safari, you have to wait like 2 seconds or something like that because of something janky. Yeah, it's kind of weird. You got to use like a set timeout or whatever before you can send the request. But this attack still absolutely works. And the majority of this blog post was just explaining the setup and explaining what this thing is and the way that they went about, you know, building a test environment for it, which is cool and helpful if you want to play around with it a little bit more. But I was a little bit underwhelmed when I got to the end and I'm just like, oh, it's just like window.open? Okay, cool. You know, like I'll do that.
Crazy. That's really, really interesting. It kind of reminds me. So I don't know. I don't think I added this and then I removed it because I knew you wouldn't have time to read it. But I don't know if you saw, there was this CTF write-up.
Oh my gosh, dude.
From IDK CTF 2024.
Is this the iframe thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Dude,
yeah,
I read it. Dude, my mentee sent it to me as soon as
it came out like 3 days ago.
Yeah, and I woke up and I like looked at the message. I was like, oh, what's this? I clicked on it and it was like 6 a.m. in the morning. I was reading it groggy and I'm like, yeah, oh, dude, my gosh, this is insane. I can't even process
insane.
Any of
it's
this.
It's insane. But like, you know, there's a lot of this like sort of similar behavior where like if you like load a page first, mm-hmm. then it like allow it sets like different CSP behavior or like
cross origin or CSP or sandboxing behavior depending on
it inherits the CSP and then it like I also need to reread because it was so dude, I read through it and I was like, what the heck? Like there was like new attributes that I didn't even know, like iframe sandbox and iframe source doc.
Yeah, now we're like, gonna have to find that link and put it in the description.
I put it at the bottom.
Oh, did you? Okay.
But yeah, well, maybe we'll save that for next week.
Yeah, maybe we will, because I actually would like to go back and reread that and get a more concrete grip on it, because that iframe stuff and the attribute inheritance and like all of that is really tricky. But yeah, I just want to swing back around to this browser tracking protection thing for a second, because I feel like this is one of those issues that kind of like slid under the radar and has been kind of foiling POCs. You know, and you're like, why is this working? I know that this should work. this is very well could be the reason if you're in Firefox or Safari. So just do a window.open to your target page anytime within the past 30 days from that origin, and you're good to go. all right. Oh, here's the other, dude. I had another one more interesting takeaway from this. This setting is not a, I was kind of curious about how this setting gets stored, right? Let me take a sip of something real quick, because I my throat is hecking up. Okay. This is not stored. I was kind of wondering how this was stored, right? And so I was like, oh, I wonder if this could actually tell us whether we have been on a specific website or not within the past however many days, by detecting whether we could send a cross-origin request to that website, right? And it turns out you can. And even if you go and you clear your browser history, if you go to that website and you send a request and it sends cookies, that setting is still there.
Okay, bro, hear me out.
Yeah.
There's a canary there. I don't know if you realized it, but in the same way that you can like CSS exfiltrate with like, you know, like the sort of like, true, like if it goes through, then that's an indicator. So, you know, you could brute force, like, you know,
it's a cross-site leak of sorts, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Like, you know, if the request goes through, then you know that path exists. So you brute force paths until you hit one that exists. But
here's the thing. It won't
be incremental, right?
You have to control JavaScript execution on the website of that origin.
Oh, the target?
Yeah.
Oh.
So if they clicked on the link, then you should already be able to know that.
Okay, that's a little trickier.
Yeah, it's more interesting from like a just general overall security perspective, where it's like, okay, well, I cleared my browser history, but also this, if I go to, you know, whatever website and say fetch, has the user clicked on a link from this website and gone to another website? And yes, that setting is still stored. So I just thought that was an interesting little tidbit. I don't think it's an actionable vulnerability or anything, but there definitely is some interesting nuance to it, because you can, if you do get an XSS, you could even trigger this attack from the client side, right?
Yeah.
And if it does go through, then you have a true or false on whether the user has logged into a specific, you know, or clicked on a link from this website to a different website in the past 30 days, which is gives you a decent amount of time range on it. So yeah, I don't know, man. A little bit weird, a little bit fringe, but I figured I'd mention it just because generally security related. Okay. Let me see. Yeah, this next one. All right, I'll take the Dom Clobbering one as well, if you don't mind, because I have been playing around with this lately.
Sure, I saw this so tool fun. And I was like, again, it's Tool Tuesday, man.
Yeah.
Tool Tuesday.
Yeah, well, so essentially how this conversation started is I think somebody in the Critical Thinkers tier was asking about Dom Clobbering. I think it was like XSS Doctor or something. And then Jay Haddix hopped up in there and dropped this research on us. And we're like, whoa, what is this? And there's some really great research. I mean, I think this has been around, this was 2023, so it's actually pretty recent research from somebody named Sohail Kodayari. Sorry about that. I did my best. But it's everything you wanted to know about Dom Clobbering, but were afraid to ask. And I think this is a really cool presentation for anybody who wants to like understand Dom Clobbering at a basic level and understand how to start exploiting it. And there's lots of great information in there, but the real gem that came out of that was this domclob.xyz website that documents a bunch of like Dom Clobbering functionality that you can use to essentially clobber certain variables inside of a DOM when you only have like HTML injection versus XSS, right? And within that, there is this payload generator. Once again, the week of the payload generator, where you
so
can
so many bookmarks to add, man.
Yeah, where you can say like, okay, the variable I want to clobber is like response dot status underscore code, right? And then you just click generate, and it will generate like five different ways for you to clobber that variable using an a tag, using a form, using like a text area inside of a form, and all of these things. And I just think once again, that makes our life much simpler because we know that, that's possible, but now we got to go and research, oh, where's, you know, what elements should I use? Right. Is it ID or is it name? You know, that's one of the things that is kind of tricky about DOM clobbering. So this payload generator makes it much easier.
Yeah, dude. You know, I think the way I love to think about this is like a contractor who has like those, like a really expensive tool, right? Like it was an investment, but like it does something very specific very well. And you're like, why do you have that? And it's like, because if I didn't have that, I would have to know how to do it the other way or manually or the old school way. And instead, I have invested in this tool to do it better.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what this type of stuff is. Like, could you go through and like, you know, maybe there's something to be said about like the learning process of like, maybe you do that once, like the first time you do a DOM clobbering, just to understand like how it works and get all the background and whatever. But then like, use the tool, like make your life easier and like do it more efficiently, because that's why it exists. Like having tools and using them effectively is like so, so important.
Yeah. Especially for career hunters, right? Like if you're going to be in you know, security for the rest of your life, like I plan to be, like it makes sense to invest in these tools and build them out, and know about them and document them for yourself, because sometimes there are people out there whose thing is DOM clobbering and they're like gonna maintain this website on DOM clobbering for you, and you just have to know where it is and how to use it. So that was a great takeaway. I definitely have been thinking about that a lot. Okay, so we got a couple more things to go through here, but I kind of want to take a pause real quick and just reflect on that episode that we did with Franz, like back in Vegas, okay, where he was talking about the X correlation IDs and the request IDs and what kind of logging pipelines those get integrated into. And here's why I wanted to pause about that, because I was thinking like, okay, so Franz found that thing. That's really cool. How can we take that concept that he used and expand it and apply it to other areas? Like, what are the things like request ID that I was totally sleeping on, right? And I definitely should have been sussing, but I just was like, ah, it's just request ID. Like, that never does anything, right? And so I started brainstorming on it a little bit. I'll give you some time to think, Joel, because I'm kind of throwing this on you last minute. But one of the things that popped up in my mind is Sentry and or like client-side error logging that occurs you know, via Sentry or via some other provider, right? And I know that there are some exploits out there, like there's like a Sentry SSRF, I think HackerOne was vulnerable to at one point, and that sort of thing. But I feel like that environment in general, unless it's all going back to one dashboard, could have a similar effect to what Franz did with the request ID, right? Where you throw some payloads in there and then that goes through the logging pipeline, like ends up in like some custom dashboard they've built to like show all of their JS errors or whatever, and then pops and you get access to a bunch of like logged session tokens or something like that from the client side. So that's one of the things I was thinking of. Do you have anything in your brain that kind of like you definitely looked at and thought, oh, that's sketchy, but I see it everywhere. No one's exploiting it, so I'm just gonna move along.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely things where I sort of draw the line. So, like, I think I used to be a lot more, like, permissive, I think, in terms of, like, things I would consider as, like, ooh, maybe there's a bug here. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think where I really have lately drawn the line is, like, anything to do with, most things to do with, like, new account creation, new setup, like, initial setup, account setup, like, that kind of stuff. Like, maybe I'll put some payloads in there.
Yeah.
But I'm not super concerned about like recording the traffic of like a new account setup, because maybe there is a bug in there, like maybe there's some form of an ATO or something, but like most of the time, like this is a one-time scenario that like happens where like you have very limited amount of configuration. It like probably won't ever pop up more than once. So if it's something specific that like a user needs to like hit a certain URL during the setup phase or something, like that's a very hard attack scenario to propose to the program.
It is.
That being said, like I'm still going to record it. I'm still going to look like, you know, but
well, I think you can get caught up on that sometimes too. Like I've often spent many times or a lot of time before the many times, man, I don't know what is wrong with me today, man. You know, I've spent a lot of time, pre-off just kind of playing with that flow and like trying to get it to do something funky or whatever. And I'm like, man, 99.9% of the functionality of this application is on the other side of this process. Like maybe I should just, you know, but I also thought you were going to go in a different direction with that, because I've seen a lot of people pop crazy stuff on signup flows, or like one, I think under discussed type of bug is signup hijacking. If there is some way for you to predict what kind of unique identifier the user will get before they actually have an account, and then brute force that to take over active signups, then I think that that is a really high value attack, because then you can you know, sometimes you can get access to PII that's cached in the signup flow, or maybe even affect that user's password, whatever. Or maybe even just automatically get logged into their account if you just like, yeah, I accept the terms and conditions, and that's like the last step, and then it says, okay, welcome to the website or whatever.
Right.
So yeah, I think this is kind of like what we talk about when we say everybody's got their own set of eyes for testing, right? You know, Franz looks at the request ID and says, I think that could be weird. And, you know, there's people that look at the signup flow and be like, that seems a little odd. And then the rest of us sort of skip over it. And that's why it's important to have a variety of hackers hacking on your program, rather than just like one pen test company you use every year over year.
Yep. Yep. For sure.
Yeah. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to that? Things that are like X correlation ID that you think might be sketchy, but you haven't taken the time to dive into?
No, but I think like, just generally speaking, like, it's a very healthy mindset to like not get so like
systematic about it all.
Yeah, like repetitive, like autopilot, right? Yeah. Like you don't want to just be like, oh, I've seen that header a million times. Like taking a step back and thinking, what is that header? Like, have I ever thoroughly looked into that and seen like what like why did they send that header? Yeah. Like there's some reason. It's not just there for no reason. Like some technology is sending it, or some, you know, tracing behind the scenes, or like, you know, it's there for some reason. Like you don't put something in an application for no reason.
Yeah. And I think this is another reason that I really advocate for spending a lot of time on an application, you know, spending more time than you are, you know, comfortable spending, because you get to the point when you're out of ideas. And then you sit there and you're forced to be creative. You're forced to think, all right, well, what if there was a, you know, RC in the request ID, you know, header, right? Or like that sort of thing. And you try those things out and you grow as a hacker. So spend time, spend time, go deep, guys.
Absolutely.
The last thing that I wanted to mention on that was, I think those endpoints that return a one pixel GIF, I think are mostly just kind of used for logging or like,
The tracking
pixels. Yeah, tracking pixels and stuff like that. Those don't necessarily, I've never seen anything weird with those. But I do wonder where all that data ends up and what kind of vulnerabilities there could be there. So just a couple thoughts that I had surrounding all that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, last thing. Mm. Second to last thing. You posted this link. Mm-hmm. And I was very confused because it does nothing for me. So maybe you can...
Yeah, the one to my website?
Yes.
Okay, well, hold up. Did you... Oh, shoot. Did I...
Oh, wait. Now it even does even less of something, actually. It wasn't doing that before.
Well, no. It works. Yeah, click at the beginning of the link. Don't click on the middle part. So this is just a... Here, I'll send it to you in Discord. This is just a little quirk of HTML that I found out the other day that, you know, I want to say I mentioned it on the pod, but maybe I didn't. So I just wanted to go ahead and mention it, which is that you can, if you have a tag injection, you can actually trigger a post request, which is something that I didn't know. Wait, it still doesn't do anything for you?
I'm clicking it and I'm looking at my network tab and there's nothing.
What? No, it works, dude. You're tripping.
I'm on the latest Chrome.
You're tripping, dude. It works. So essentially, let me just tell the people about this, and we'll troubleshoot your janky Chrome instance afterwards. So essentially, if you have an A tag, which I feel like is one of the more common places where you can get an injection, because A tags are allowed in Markdown, and sometimes you want to try to trigger a post with that because you want to trigger like a CSERF on the website, and it's like maybe it's origin based or checks for sea surf or something like that. And if you are able to smuggle in the ping attribute, then when you click that the link, it will execute the link, but also will send a post request to wherever you set the ping attribute to. And the post request, Joel, I don't know why you can't see it, dude. I don't know why, but it contains some interesting things. It contains a header ping from and ping to that contains the full location href of the page that you're on. So wait,
are you on Firefox?
No, I'm on Chrome. Joel,
so weird.
You've got some filter on for sure, or something like that.
You think? I'll open it in incognito.
Yeah, just try that. But the ping attribute I thought was really interesting because I didn't know that you could trigger that post request specifically with an A tag. And I think this could be helpful for one, leaking location href via these ping from, ping to headers. And then for two, I think this could be applicable in sort of like a client-side path traversal slash text injection or HTML injection to C surf environment, right? Where you can sort of create this A tag dynamically. And when the user clicks on it, you trigger some C surf that happens on the website. And I think this would also be really helpful in an environment where there are same site strict cookies, where the request must originate from the same origin for the cookies to be sent. So if you can get an A tag injection and add the ping attribute, then you can trigger that post request. Joel, do you still not have it, man?
I'm going to send you a video.
Oh my God, Joel. All right. Let's end it here. Let's call it a wrap and I'll go troubleshoot your instance. All right, let's go.
Okay. All right, dude. This is a good episode.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for listening. And if you want more Critical Thinking content, head over to ctbb.show/discord. Join the Discord. There's lots of great conversations and chats going on over there. And if you want to support the show, there's the Discord subscriber tiers, which give you access to masterclasses, AMAs, hackalongs, exclusive scripts, and an exclusive chat channel with us. We'll see you there.